This is PhotoBizX episode number 555, and something a little different for today's episode. Our special guest is an ex-Navy veteran in the US. She suffered PTSD after documenting Hurricane Katrina and rediscovered her love of photography years later. Today, her main focus is breaking into the photography art world with her fine art portraits. And although she's focused on income, it's not the driving factor behind her passion. Instead, it's the art of photography and her expeditions to places like Peru, Nepal, Egypt, and Mongolia that are really the driving force in her life today. I'm talking about Rochelle Steele, and that interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here, host of the PhotoBizX podcast, where I interview guests from around the world to help you build a better photography business even faster than going it alone. I know you're going to love today's episode with Rochelle. It is a little different to what we normally cover on the podcast in regards to interviews. This is less focused on marketing and pricing and sales or Facebook ads. In fact, you could say this is almost the opposite, because Rochelle is choosing to forgo some of the luxuries of her life so that she has the ability to pursue the photography that she wants to create. And although she could be making a lot more money as a commercial photographer or even a portrait photographer, she wants to stay true to herself, to her art, and be recognized for the photographer that she is. So stick around for that one. Of course, we still do definitely have a business focus, but as you'll hear, there's a lot more to this story than generating an income from photography.
Now, a macro look at the last episode.
Before we do get into that interview with Rochelle, if you didn't catch last week's episode with Maggie Robinson, well, that was 100% or a 180 degree turnaround in comparison to what we're talking about today, because that was all business. In fact, I think Maggie really helped to dispel the myth that location or where you're based is a barrier to your success as a photographer. Of course, yes, you do need some kind of population around you, but Maggie is passionate about the fact that it's more about what you can deliver for your clients. If it's something special to them, you will find enough clients to build an incredibly successful business with a great income. So again, if you haven't heard that interview with Maggie, get ready to be blown away and at the same time fall in love with her great accent. I strongly recommend you get back and have a listen to that one if you haven't heard it yet.
You're listening to PhotoBiz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
And just quickly, before we do jump into this interview with Rochelle, if you were on the sales training call with me and Audra Harris of Focus on Your Photos last week, you will know that was an incredibly comprehensive session on sales, which you could apply to your Zoom photography sales or in-person photography sales. Audra covered an absolute ton in that. The feedback has been fantastic. Just from the end of the chat on the live call, there are comments like, so comprehensive and informative, loved it, thank you, from Darsha Vu. Sandrian of Sandrian B Photography said, this was very valuable training and absolutely learned a lot. Katie Campbell, she says, once again, so much more than expected and can't wait to add so many of these tactics to my process and ordering appointments. Kerry Struble says, new level of sales success unlocked. Thanks so much, Audra and Andrew. And it goes on and on. So good to read all those comments. If you did register for that sales training, make sure you get over to the photobizx.com website. The recording of that training is now live on the website, including a role play video that Audra has just gotten to me today. This is a role play video where she plays the part, or her part, as the photographer selling the artwork. And she has her wife playing the part of a real client. So she's basically taken what happened with a real ordering appointment and role played that out for us in the sales training. So you can see exactly what she was talking about in that training and relate it to a real world sale. Again, that is on the course page. It's available to you right now if you did attend or register for that sales training. And you should also have access to the pricing masterclass with Joel Dunn if you did register before that live training happened. If there are any issues with that or anything to do with the course, please let me know and I'll make sure we get that sorted for you. Now, if you weren't on that sales training, I'm guessing your sales are going incredibly well, which is awesome. Congratulations. I will give you a heads up that there is some more training coming down the pipeline to you. The next lot of training will be happening later this month with Laurie McBrown of Laurie Brown Photography, and she's going to be sharing exactly how she sets up and profits so beautifully well from her 40 over 40 campaign. So it's going to be a start to finish of how to put together your very own 40 over 40 campaign or any offshoot based on those strategies. And there are so many ways you could apply those same strategies to different marketing campaigns. So look out for news on that one. I'll have more updates in the coming weeks.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
If you are hearing this announcement, it does mean you are listening to the free version of the podcast. Now, what that means is you will not hear the full interview today with Rochelle. I am saving a large portion of the second half for premium members only. And the reason I do that is so I do not have to have ads on the podcast. There is no advertising. There are no advertisers. This is the only ad you will ever hear on the PhotoBizX podcast because it is driven and supported by the membership. Without the members, the podcast wouldn't exist and I wouldn't have it any other way because it forces me, it pushes me to record and create the kind of content that is worth paying for. My number one aim is your success as a listener, as a member, your success as a photographer in business. If I can't get the kind of content that's worth paying for, then I would not expect anyone to be paying to be a premium member. But the reality is, if you implement just a little of what you hear from every episode of the podcast, from any episode of the podcast, certainly not from every episode. If you implement just a little of what you hear, if you pick and choose the parts that apply to you and your business, you will more than easily pay for your membership as a PhotoBizX premium member. But look, if you want to put me to the test, you can check it out for as little as $1 with a 30-day trial. Come and see exactly what you're missing out on every single week. Get access to the members' Facebook group and see what the membership is all about and how it could easily improve your profits or your profitability as a photographer just by implementing a little of what you hear from the premium content. There are more details about that over at photobizx.com/try.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is a US Navy veteran and had been an avid photographer for most of her life. She lost her passion, however, for photography in 2005 after the devastating Hurricane Katrina. Although she had no formal training in photography, she was assigned to visually document the recovery efforts following that hurricane. And that meant long hours in the water, absorbing the death and destruction of Katrina. Now, documenting that aftermath was intense. She was going house to house, counting bodies and clearing roads that had cars full of bodies. And she developed photography PTSD due to the horrors of what she experienced and photographed. She rediscovered her photography, however, after leaving the service in 2016 and earned a degree in fine art photography. She graduated top of class and was awarded the Academy's highest honor, Best in Show. She's since gone on to win a multitude of awards and has been named the International Photographer of the Year 3 times running. I can't wait to learn more and hear more about her story and how she's making a living from photography today. I'm talking about the super talented Rochelle Steele, and I am rapt to have her with us now. Rochelle, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the beautiful introduction, Andrew. It's an honor to be here today.
Oh, look, it's my pleasure. Does the Navy seem like another lifetime ago now, or does it still feel like it's part of you?
It has been quite a while, but the sea will always live inside of me. I'll always identify myself as a sailor. It is forever who I am.
So when you were in the Navy, were you allowed to or encouraged to take photos of anything and everything that you saw?
No, A lot of the time I was on two different ships and I was also stationed on shore. There's a lot of working. So it's not like you can actually really even have a camera with you while you're working, especially one of the facilities was top secret and the nature of what I did as an electronics technician. So mostly I was just on if we were hitting a port or if I was in Liberty, I could kind of take more tourist type or just kind of recording what was going on. Back in the day, this was before, well, it kind of overlapped a little bit with cell phones and stuff, but that was your cell phone snapshot, was your camera. So yeah, you could do what you wanted as long as it didn't have anything to do with the Navy.
Right, because the Navy does have professional photographers, don't they? Like most of the armed or all the armed services.
Yeah, the Navy has photographer's mates, and I believe they might go by something media specialists now. There's combat camera. So there's people that are there exactly to do that.
Right, so how did you get roped into documenting the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina?
Well, it was kind of a weird coincidence. I was stationed in Pascagoula, Mississippi, and I was there during the hurricane with my children. We swam through the storm. It was this big harrowing journey. And as everything kind of was calming down, there were so few people there and the effort really started. And people, you know, deep sea divers, they all started kind of trickling in. And I realized right off there was no one there to document it. And what we all recognize this was a historical moment, and it just was natural for me to kind of grab my camera and say, hey, I can do it. And they said, absolutely, you can do it. Do as much as you can and the best you can. And off I went on one of the most incredible journeys. At the time, I thought, wow, what an honor. I almost felt like I was getting one over on everybody. You know, here I was going around doing all the pictures and stuff, but I didn't really realize the impact it was going to have on me through the lens later on. But that's how that kind of worked. And then from then I was transferred. I went to the war and the rest is history. The life kept going on after that.
Wow. So when I was reading your story and learning a little bit about it, I was feeling the same way. It's like you've won the lottery there, being there to document something so historical without thinking about what you were actually going to be seeing, particularly if you hadn't seen or experienced much of that before. So when you said you were stationed there, you were living there with your kids and working there?
I was stationed a naval station, Pascagoula, which is right on the coast of Mississippi. So a very small port, more tiny ships that would be mostly in South America for more counter drug ops, stuff like this. So I was on a ship there. And then I was for 2 years, I was on shore duty where I had my two babies and my 2 years at a calibration facility. So we were going boarding ships, doing calibrations and stuff like that. So it just so happened to be that I was there and I had the will to do it. And I thought, oh, please, you know, let's get this done. They said, absolutely.
Right. So did they give you naval photography gear or did you just use what you had?
I had a camera and I also had another friend that gave me his camera and his was digital. I'd never even had anything to do with that. So I had a film camera and a digital camera.
But not supplied by the Navy. That was all by you.
Yeah, there was really nothing there for anyone to supply.
Right.
At the time, there was literally nothing left. So it was just, you know, what I could get my hands on and what I had with me.
Fantastic. So were you actually getting paid to do that? And I'm asking that because I'm curious about the copyright of the images that you captured. Were they copyrighted to the Navy or were they yours?
Yeah, they're copyrighted to the Navy.
Right. So you were getting paid. You're working as a naval officer and a photographer.
Well, I was enlisted, but the way that it works when you're in the military is you're just in and your paychecks come. There's no hours or you're going to do X, Y, Z. So you're just in and every 2 weeks you get your paycheck and that's just how it goes. What you're told to do, you do. It's not, there's no kind of differentiation.
Okay. They own you.
Yeah, they do.
So do you still have access to the photos you captured there or you don't even get to see them again?
No, I don't. I have maybe just a few very poor, almost Xerox copy, maybe three or four that aren't even anything. And oh man, what I wouldn't give now to have the ability to look back over those now that I have my experience and kind of wisdom as a photographer, I would love to look back over them and see, you know, what my point of view was at the time, how I was seeing what was going on.
Yes. Yeah. I imagine it's so different now that you're so much more experienced in photography. I mean, I look back at past holidays that I've had and I think, wow, I'd love to go back there now, knowing what I know now.
Yeah. I like to almost year to year. You know, I could look back even see 2-3 years ago and I think, oh man, you know, it's awesome when you could recognize your own growth. Or at least you try to grow.
Absolutely.
You're always trying to improve.
How long after that did you realize that you had lost your passion for photography? And, you know, were you actually diagnosed with PTSD? Or is that something that, you know, you're using in, I don't want to say marketing or PR now? Like, how did that come about, that term?
I didn't realize I had PTSD for a while because I went directly from that directly to being forward deployed into the war, basically into the Gulf of Oman. And I still felt great. I loved it. I'm this adrenaline junkie type personality, if you will. And it wasn't until the end of my service. And by the way, I got out in 2007. And I knew right away I didn't want to shoot anymore at all. Not that I thought, oh, I don't want to do that again. It was just out of me. And I went on a full-blown deployment, 10 months at sea, and I never even touched my camera. I never even grabbed it out, hitting port or anything. And I just thought, oh, it's gone. For the first time in my life, it's gone. And I didn't realize that I had PTSD till the end, till after the war. And then it was just one thing happened one day. And it was like, everything's different now. And I kind of almost knew something had changed inside of me. And in about 2010, someone had gifted me a camera, a Canon Rebel, with a note that said, hey, start shooting again. You know, it's time. And when I went to shoot, it was the most tremendously unpleasant turmoil, angst. Ugh, it was so much emotional pain and terribleness. And then I would do a shoot. And then it was like the highest level of elation. I was so emotionally unregulated photographically, I guess you could, now that I know how to articulate what that was. And that's kind of one of the natures of PTSD, right? You're going from, instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you're going 0, 1, 2, 9, you know, and that's how it was. And I just thought, there's absolutely no way I can do this, because I just felt so wildly out of control when it came to my photography. That wasn't pleasant for me at all, but I thought, man, I think I'm good. I want to do it. I want to really try to do it. So it was with the confronting of that, which is something you have to just confront and confront and confront until you can finally work through, find a process.
Right. So I've heard the term PTSD, and I think I know what it is, but on your, I think it's your website or your socials, you know, you're calling it photography PTSD. So were you diagnosed with PTSD, or are you just calling it photography PTSD?
Well, I actually vary, and it hasn't been till recently that I've even been able to share that with people, that I suffer from it. And I call, in relation to my photography, I just use the term photographic PTSD. But I have, it's through an accumulation of maybe many childhood traumas compounded with 9 years active duty. Hurricane Katrina was not the worst thing of my service or my life or anywhere near it. But when you get these compacted traumas over, at some point, you kind of learn your process. Your brain loses its process to just operate normally, because it's just got to ask too much. I often like to describe it as like every house, maybe for a hoarder, when that very last bedroom gets full of stuff, there's no more stuff for a hoarder to hide the things at, you know, and then that's when it becomes like, holy cow, this is something that I have no way of absolutely managing whatsoever. So I use, and I only, and I've only been able to really talk about it till recently, because I really care about my veteran community. And I think it's okay. There's nothing to hide. There's nothing to be ashamed of at all whatsoever.
No. So is it like PTSD from
It is. It's post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right. So that's what you've been diagnosed with, but it's manifesting itself in your photography as well?
Well, it's more of a, you're like become deregulated with your ability to have your brain function in a normal way. And it can show up in many different ways of life. A lot of people with you know, anger, anxiety, withdrawal, your failure to be able to communicate in a healthy way, unable to integrate back into society. That's a big one too. And a lot of people, and I can only speak for my own veteran community, you know, they try to cope with it in so many different ways. And a lot of time that turns into addiction, domestic issues, the inability to have employment, that, you know, you just can't, your brain kind of loses its ability to go through the natural functioning in life. Even something as little as going to a grocery store might be something that is unmanageable in that moment emotionally. It can hit people in very many different ways. There's a lot of different symptoms, but ultimately there's a big crisis with veteran suicide and PTSD. And I finally thought, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be ashamed, because it's okay to say, and it's okay to fight. And I think that's the whole message, is fighting through it every day. You got to fight the battle every day. You know, you got to fight the dragon.
For sure. So,
that's my whole mission.
So with the photography then, did that help you fight the dragon, or is that something you have to fight through to be able to take good photos?
It wasn't until, because I was already starting to get in exhibitions, winning awards, but I still couldn't function as a photographer. I couldn't even attend my own opening. I entered this international contest, took the silver, you know, took the second place, and the gallery was calling me, hey, you coming? I could not. So I couldn't put myself forward into that world still. And I thought, well, geez, I'm not going to be able to climb Mount Everest with a camel on my back. And that's when I hopped into my formal training, and I ended up getting my BFA in photography. And then I continued on and I got my MA in photography. And what that did is it really kind of like whipped, it was almost like boot camp for my brain again. And it really gave my brain a new process, said, no, you're going to do, and especially photographic, because this is my world now. No, you're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and keep on going. And the more you do it, the more you can get new pathways in your brain. And, you know, I guess you could say for me, it was art is healing, but almost like on steroids, because the school I went to, that was no joke. That was no little mellow. Oh, hey, here's how you use your camera. You know, it was almost like doing a swan dive into a 60-foot deep pool, you know. But for me, that's what worked for me.
So did you go and study and photography to validate the fact you could take good photos, or did you go there to get better at photography?
I already knew that I had, I guess you could say, an eye. Like I say, you know, you can teach anybody how to use a camera, but you can't teach them how to have a soul. So I already knew I kind of had the soul. I already knew I had the eye, but I didn't know how far I could get to it. But I knew I wanted to go to the top if I could, or somewhere near it. And I knew I wouldn't be able to go as far as maybe I had the ability to, unless I went through the rigors of a formal training. And what that does is that puts you kind of in the care of these masters. And then they kind of whip you into shape. And I kind of knew that in order to get, you got to get through. I mean, when they say, oh, there's glass ceilings, oh, in photography, there's ceiling after ceiling after ceiling after ceiling. So I was like, hey, let's do this the best way I possibly can. You're not going to get there just by saying, oh, I think I want to work for Vogue Italia. I think I want to get into Vogue. No. So I kind of already understood that if I wanted to really see how far I could go, that I needed to get some really, the tools in the tool belt need to get solid.
Got it. Look, I want to come back and fill in some of the blanks, but I also want to fast forward now and just give us an idea, the listener, an idea of where you are at right now. Like, are you making an income? Are you supporting the family? Do you get a pension from the military so you don't really need to work, so you get to do this for fun? Like, how does it all work now?
For me, it's a delicate balance. I do get a pension from the military. I am currently a professor at the Academy of Art University, which is where I went, and also at a local community college here in Sacramento. I also sell my work through my prints, through exhibitions. Most recently, I tapped into this grand world of millionaires attending fundraisers. So I'm just starting to get into that world, which is a whole nother world too. And I think that's where the real money comes from selling your works. So I have a little balance with all of things going on, and somehow I managed to make it from month to month. And I use that to fund my big, big, big passion, which is working on these photo expeditions internationally and kind of continuing my passion, my sense of adventure and wanderlust and high pressure, high put out, you know. So it's a tricky web.
Yeah. So you have an undying love for photography. You want to create, but you have to do all these little things to be able to keep creating.
Yeah, I do.
So you see yourself as a photographer, not a photography business owner. Would that be right?
100%. Because I think where there's a kind of a line in the sand, and I've had people say, dude, you could be killing it if you were a commercial photographer. There's a lot of money, and that's where the money is, I guess you could say. But for me, I want to create what I want to create. I like fine art portraiture and fine art environmental portraiture in the form of projects. And that necessarily isn't where the big money's at. So you kind of have to make a decision, you know, can't really have two husbands, I say.
Okay, so you could be making a lot more money if you were a commercial photographer. I think I and you would agree with that.
Yeah.
So you've taken the choice to say, I'm going to make less, but I'm going to focus on my photography, my art. So where are you looking to get to, if anywhere?
I think it would be nice. You know, I've definitely established my reputation and I've definitely established a name for myself internationally. And I think that for me, that will always outrank the money. But I would love to start getting this big funding that can say, okay, cool. I guess the ultimate goal for me as a fine art photographer is getting an agent. And let that person kind of work out the details of everything so that I continue. And then my exhibitions, because I exhibit pretty regularly. And then that could be something like a traveling worldwide exhibition that an agent kind of controls, you know, getting that milk cow over and over and over again. You know, get a gallon of milk from every city, if you will, something like that.
Right. Okay. So you would get paid wherever your photography was exhibited, and then you would also sell prints from those exhibitions, and that would help fund then the expeditions that you want to be going on to document.
Yes. I do a bit of crowdfunding, though, too. I failed to mention that. A little crowdfunding can get your dinners paid for, too, when you're on the road, so...
Right. So you mentioned you've got a couple of kids. Are you married as well?
No, I'm a single mom and I have been for about 8 years now.
Okay. So you're making the financial decision to bring in less to pursue your dreams with photography.
Yeah.
So when you speak to, I don't know, whoever is influencing you in your life, whether it's your family, friends, do they say, Rochelle, you're crazy, like go and shoot commercially? Or do they say, you are living your dream, girl, keep going?
They say, keep going. They say, oh my gosh, we're so proud. Every accomplishment kind of moves you up the ladder. And it's like, I have my own little cheering squad. And, you know, no one has to tell my daughters that. And they're 18 and 19 now, or actually they're 18 and 20 now. So they're both on their own with their full-time jobs and school and all this stuff, which is awesome. It's like, woo, we made it. I made it through that. But no, everyone in my life that's in my personal circle is, they're like, do it further. Yes. And it's that kind of stuff that helps me, kind of propels me to keep going. But yeah, they're very supportive.
I love it. Okay, I want to talk more about your photography, but I still just want to stick with this for a second. Do you have to go without to do the things you want to do with photography?
Yeah, we do sometimes.
Like what? I mean, do you have a cheap car instead of an expensive car? Do you have a smaller house or do you rent instead of have a mortgage?
I have a cheaper car. I try to live without credit because I can't really afford to be doing the credit card bills and stuff. But everything's on a very, very, very tight budget. I mean, I can't remember the last time I was able to go shopping in the mall. I always just kind of try to thrift. You know, I mean, this is just the life of a single mother. Period, I guess. And that's a pretty universal thing. So yeah, as long as I can keep our rent and our bills paid and a little bit of food in the fridge, everything else always seems to work itself out. And, you know, here and there, these little print sales, they really help us get through. And I'm still going to, you know, it's like, as long as I can still keep doing, moving forward, I actually think there'll be some pretty gnarly paydays coming up soon, but you know, now that I'm tapping into benefits and fundraisers and stuff like that. That's a whole nother world that I'm kind of stepping into. And that's exciting too. But you can't get there until you have a really, really, really solid reputation for yourself. And you can't get there unless you're willing to sacrifice. So without going too far deep into it, you know, it takes quite a bit of sacrifice to get where you want, because you have to have a big body of work to back up your reputation. And you kind of have to have a lot of awards and recognition. And then these doors start opening. And that's kind of where I'm at now in my career.
I'm going to come back to that in a second, because just before we started recording, you told me about an expedition that you have coming up.
Yeah.
You may even be on that expedition when this goes live. And I want you to put this in here now, because you just said, you know, that's the life of a single mom. That's a universal thing. But what you're about to do, I don't think that's normal. Like, tell me about this trip or this expedition that you're going on, what you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, every time I go on one of these, what I try to accomplish is at least, and I try not to be too specific, but I try to accomplish at least 10 to 15 world-class level images for a body of work. I like to go into areas where maybe people can't really access them and do really, really high level, beautiful black and white work, and kind of getting my own adventure out of it. But also, and this is a big responsibility, is being a visual storyteller. And I like to connect people and give the normal person something to reflect on about themselves as they're taking in this work, and kind of culturally sharing and deepening people's understanding. That's what I love, love, love to do. And then through that, then the exhibitions come, the print sales come. So in January, I'll be going down to Cusco, Peru, and then I'll continue on with more. I have four biggies this year coming up. So it'll start.
So Peru, and then where?
I'll go back to Nepal, which is where I was working this year, back into Kathmandu. And then from Kathmandu, I'll go into Egypt. I'll come home for 2 months, and then I'll go into Mongolia, and I'll probably work there for 2.5 months. Well, not probably, I will. I'll be there working in Mongolia. So,
I mean, that's not the life of a normal stay-at-home mom.
No, it's not. I want to live so fantastically and so passionately. I want to, the act of living with passion and living hard, I guess you could say, I'm not going to hold back. I refuse to hold back my life, even for a second. That's kind of my driving force. And I like that to be something that connects me with my fellow veterans. I want to say, dude, you better live, damn it. Look it, we're living. And that kind of guides me. I go from there, not to go too far into it. But
no, but I don't think that's a valuable message only for veterans. I think that applies to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many of us, you know, stuck in the rut of paying the mortgage, saving for the next car, trying to put our, you know, our kids through school. I mean, sure, we have to do all those things, but maybe we can cut back here or there and go and have some more adventures and do the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a choice, isn't it?
It is a choice. It is a choice. I trim all the fat here, and then whatever I can kind of put together, that'll get me through. You'd be surprised how many places you can go and eat for a dollar a day.
So let's touch on Kathmandu. So you're going to go to Kathmandu. How long are you going there for? Who are you staying with, if anyone? So, like, I'm curious about the preparation before you go somewhere like that to make sure, or to give yourself the best chance of getting the best photos for your portfolio.
100%. So I was working there earlier this year with an artist residency and kind of under contract to do an exhibition there in the city. When I finished it, the project's called Early Morning Incense. In that amount of time, I had kind of spread my own adventures out, and I kind of got a base of understanding and my images. And I kind of already knew before I left that I needed to come back, get a little bit deeper. So while I was there, I was actively making my own contacts and cultivating my own relationships, so that when I go back, I'll stay with my friend who is actually a Zimbabwean diplomat. So right there, I know it'll be a much safer situation, because the personal safety can be a big concern, especially if you're a woman traveling alone, no matter how street smart you are or former military or whatnot. And then I'll go, and I've already kind of cultivated my relationships, and I'll go deeper into the Himalayas. I'll go back to the national forests. And I still, even through social media and WhatsApp, and I still kind of have my tendrils my friendships, I still maintain those so that I can always go back in and re-enter that world into open arms and get to work on the work. And the funny thing is, once people see what you're doing, because, you know, there can be a lot of closed doors to, oh, who's this American woman here, this, that. I'm trying to build immediate intimacy with people. Sometimes you might have 2-3 minutes, and I'm trying to get a world-class portrait here. As soon as they see what you're doing and that you're there to honor to the highest level and that you have the ability to do that and the kindness and the empathy to do that, boy, it's like, hey, welcome. So getting through that first welcome, we'll say, and then now going back and just deepening and rounding the project out. I'd like to end the project right now is at about 16, 18 images. I'd like to get upwards towards 28, 29, even though those are solid numbers, but you always have to visualize what you want in order to get
there. Right. So I know that if I was going to Kathmandu and let's say I was going to go trekking, there's the option of hiring a Sherpa and having them come and help. So do you take someone, I don't know if it's called a Sherpa, but do you take someone with you to translate and to break those barriers so you can get those world-class portraits?
Absolutely. And in this instance, I had went up to Pokhara, where a lot of the treks kind of leave out of there. And just a very simple guy I met, he was just like my guide for the day. And by the end of the day, you know, I'm just like, hey, dude, how do you feel about riding around on your motorcycle tomorrow? And I spent the whole day riding around with him, shooting from his bike, this, that. But I already knew. And by the end of the day, he already knew that when I came back, not only was he going to be able to feed his family for a couple months after our next go around, that he was going to be able to help me set all of that up. So even if I didn't already have the contacts in place, if I wanted to spend like quadruple the amount of money, there's tons of tours, stuff like that, that can kind of get you in the door. But I don't want to go, I want to go in through the local connections that I've made rather as to, oh, here's this, who's this American tourist clicking a camera in our face. Nobody wants tourist girl with their camera. They don't want to drop the wall for her, but I can show up with my friend and we can continue on. And I always make sure that I have someone, if there's an interpreter involved, that they understand that the number one thing is that, hey, this is a master photographer. She's working on a project about Nepalese culture. And, you know, another little tip I'd like to share is I'll have very small little prints made, even if they're just low quality. That way I can pull it right out of my pocket. And even if they don't understand English and we can't speak, we can speak visually. And as soon as they see that, they can think, wow, cool. Absolutely. They can see themselves in it and they can see that my ability to include them in the story about Nepal.
When you get introduced and they hear that you're a master photographer, you're from the States, and I'm sure they would just assume that you are more wealthy than them. Do they ever want to get paid for you to take their photo? Do they want some cash?
You know, you'd be surprised. Sometimes people are just like, yeah, no way. But I always do anyways, regardless. Sometimes I find myself forcing. And that's always something, even if I always have very, very, very little to give, which they can tell right off. They can tell right off in Patagonia. I'm not Patagonia girl. They can tell by what I have with me that I've got very meager to give. But as an American, that's always more than they have. So no matter what the outcome of our little quick shoot we do or whatnot, I always try to give someone something to respect their time and their gift of themselves that they've just given me. I always try to give something no matter what.
Like, for example?
Money.
Okay.
The thing that could help them the most in life, money.
Are you talking like a US dollar, 10 US dollars, 100?
No, their money. It's always their money, you know, but I always have a little bit on me. And even if it's something like in Nepal, you know, 50 rupees, which is not a lot, but if that's what I can, whatever I can, whatever I can give, I will. And it never has to be anything over the top or anything, because that's not, other cultures don't operate the way that we do. Some people, it's always about, oh, it's the most I can get from people, this, that. That is not the majority of the way people work around the world. Even if it's just kindness that you have to give, if you have something to give, give it, period, you know?
Okay, so I just did a quick calculation there, just to get an idea of what, you know, what it would cost to do something like this. So 50 Nepalese rupees, that's under 50 US cents. So it's not expensive for you to give them something.
No.
Great. Okay. So you'll have a pocket full of change and you can hand that out.
Yeah. I try to give it a couple hundred rupees if I can. But then, you know, just to keep it in perspective.
But it adds up quickly.
But yeah, because if I'm trying to eat 400 a day or 200 a day, and that's my budget. So that's why the preciousness of the exchange is very precious. That's why I don't waste my encounters or waste someone else's time or energy. I'm only going to shoot when I can already see through my own visualization and my own eye. Try to align my eye and my heart and my mind. I wish a lot of people would do that more too with their captures. You can feel and see. I can feel and see what I ultimately will want to exhibit. You can just kind of feel, you know, or I can, or I try to. I can't guarantee the outcome, but boy, I could tell. Just, you know.
What are you taking to shoot, like equipment-wise? Let's say you do a day excursion out of Kathmandu, out into one of the little villages with your pal on the back of the motorbike. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you taking with you?
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Okay, I keep saying last question. You just reminded me of something to ask you. What do you do about batteries and chargers when you're away in these places? Can you always find electricity?
Well, for example, I have this sitting next to me. This is my trusty little battery bank. I always have this on me. It's like, hey, when you're near electricity, you make sure every single battery you have is charged, and you better have at least 3 or 4. And whether you got to tuck them in your bra strap or in your waist or whatever, because isn't that the worst thing to miss out on the shot of your life because you don't have the battery? So, you know, if there's one thing, I may go without food, but I'm not going to go without that fifth battery, you know? So, and when you're buying electricity, you better know it and you better use it.
So. I love it. Look, Rochelle, it's been amazing to chat to you. I'm wishing you every success for your future expeditions and exhibitions. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything you have.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been an honor and an absolute pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Rochelle as much as I did. Rochelle, I'm not sure where in the world you are right now, but massive thanks again for coming on, for sharing everything you did, for being so open, unguarded, and allowing me to fire the questions at you that I did. So again, massive thanks and congrats on the success you've had so far. I can't wait to see where your photography takes you in the art world. For you, the listener, I do hope there were some takeaways in today's episode. If not, I hope you loved Rochelle's story, appreciate her passion, her direction, why she's doing what she's doing, and even how she's doing it. I mean, what an amazing life. It really is incredible what we can do with our lives in regards to travel, photography, philanthropy, making a contribution, giving back, all these different things we're able to do if we're not simply just chasing more income. Or if you just choose to live well within your means, it means so many other doors open up in regards to doing the things that you want to do with your life or leaving some time to do those other projects, spend more time with your family, travel the world, or simply work less and focus more on the things that you want to do with your life. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Are we all too caught up in just earning more, making more, getting more, obtaining more, having the bigger house, the nicer car? Do we sometimes forget that there's more to life than what we collect? Love to hear your thoughts on that. Now, in regard to Rochelle, if you want to see more from her, I've got links to anything and everything that she mentioned in the show notes for today's episode. You'll also see examples of her work. It's all there in that one spot over at photobizx.com/555. And of course, I'll be adding Rochelle into the members Facebook group. So if you do have a follow-up question, or if you just want to say thanks for coming on, for sharing what you did, you can do that inside the members group, or you can reach out to her on social media. I've got links to her Instagram account there in the show notes as well. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the podcast. I hope you have a fun, successful, great week ahead. Wherever you are in the world, stay safe, healthy, and well, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.